It's time for three stories you should know.
My first love
will be basketball.
We don't usually start this segment with a commercial for a wealth management service, but here goes. In the ad that dropped this week, a boy and girl compare their future basketball accomplishments, and it doesn't go well for the boy.
In college, I'll be third team All-American.
First team All-American, three times.
Two Final Fours.
Three straight Final Fours. Back to back to back.
I'll be Big East second team.
Big East player of the year.
Until...
My rookie contract, $4 million.
My rookie contract will be $40,000.
Ouch. I'm joined this week by The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman and NBC Sports Boston's Kyle Draper. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Karen.
Hi, Karen.
The WNBA players opted out of their contract this week. That means that the current CBA will expire after the 2019 season. Players are not asking to be paid on par with NBA players, but they are asking for better working conditions, more marketing to help the league grow, and access to the league's books so that they can better assess how much they deserve to be paid. All of this seems pretty reasonable to me. NBA players share in half of that league's revenue. Best estimates suggest that the women earn about 20%. And I know that the WNBA brings in less money, which means a larger percentage of the revenue goes towards just keeping the lights on. But at the very least, the league needs to sit down and show the women why it can't pay them the kind of money they earn playing overseas during the WNBA offseason. Playing in the WNBA shouldn't be a side gig, and the league will never grow unless they treat their superstars like superstars. Rachel, are you with me?
I am. I think that the league certainly doesn't have much to lose by opening the CBA because the last time I checked, I think that the minimum WNBA salary was about 1/10 of the minimum NBA salary. So they're really not gambling a whole lot from where I sit to ask for it to be reopened. And we're really living in the golden age of sports unions. You know, the NFL, the NBA, certainly Major League Baseball has always had a very strong union. So it makes sense that the WNBA would take a cue and fight for its rights.
Well, as you guys know, I mean, whether it's in basketball, football, baseball, whatever the sport is, in my opinion, the product is the athletes on the field. And so we are seeing it in the NBA with LeBron James taking control of his situation, his free agency situation. And it's wonderful to see the women banding together because it's not just about money. It's also about working conditions. It's about marketing. The fact that these teams have to travel commercial flights, to me, is ridiculous. These are international superstars, and they should be treated as such. And so there's clearly something going on here. And like you said, we should see the books opened up. It's a shame that they're not. What does the WNBA have to hide? And so, I think this is a win for the players. And if they stay together, I think we will see some changes.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly the math is really unknown. But I find myself thinking, well, if these players aren't underpaid, why wouldn't you open up the books? Rachel, what do you have for us?
Well, the reigning women's champions of the Boston New York Marathons will line up for the New York Marathon on Sunday. And for the first time in decades, they're both American. But American women are not the fastest marathoners. Kenyans and Ethiopians still clock the fastest times. Des Linden won Boston by slogging through terrible weather while others dropped out. And Shalane Flanagan won New York last year when the Kenyan Mary Kitani, who'd won it three times earlier, had a bad race. So should we care that the U.S. women aren't the fastest in the world if they're finding ways to gut out these races and win?
I think it's more impressive that they are gutting it out because when you look at, you know, marathon runners, traditionally the Americans aren't viewed as the fastest in the world. And so to me, they're beating the odds. They're overcoming the obstacles, you know, overcoming the doubters. To me, that speaks more.
Yeah, I don't think fans care whether their runners are the fastest or whether they're using pace setters or whatever. Fans just care about winning. Yeah. They don't care if it's an ugly win. In fact, if it's an ugly win, they say, our runner is the toughest, right? And I've been to Kenya. I've hung with running fans there, and they say our runners are the smartest. They know to use pace setters. They know to train in a certain way, and they're the best because they're the smartest and the fastest. So I think everybody just really likes to win.
There's nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing wrong with winning.
Hey, this is a front-running culture, absolutely, in the U.S. And one of the reasons why the American women are doing so well is because they and some of the American men have copied the Kenyans and Ethiopians and having these training groups, these elite mm-hmm. training groups that run and train together and make themselves better. East Africans have done this for decades, and more recently the U.S. has adopted this and made some progress.
Kyle, it's your turn, and I know you have a controversial one for
us.
Yeah,
this is one that should be the front page of every major newspaper in America. As you guys know, the Boston Red Sox won their fourth World Series title in the last 15 years. It's sort of becoming title town, understand that, but there seems to be some new phenomena, some new traditions being done at these celebration parades. Here in Boston, a 19-year-old fan threw a can of beer and actually hit Alex Cora and his daughter as they were going by on the championship float. I'm all for celebrating. I'm all for partying. And maybe this is my get off my lawn segment here, my get off my lawn take. But when fans are throwing beers at players, there's another guy, he broke part of the World Series trophy.
Right. And they're throwing them because they want them to drink them, not because they want them
to drink them. Not they're mad at them or anything like that. And the players get into it. But I think maybe we've gone just a little bit too far. When a manager and his daughter gets hit, when the World Series trophy gets broken and damaged, maybe there needs to be some unwritten rules. You know, baseball is the sport of unwritten rules, right? Maybe there needs to be unwritten rules when it comes to celebrating championships. No throwing beer. I don't understand when that became cool. You know, it doesn't seem cool to me.
Rachel, maybe this is just a case of Boston not being able to have nice things. You know, I remember way back in the day when my Minnesota Twins won their first World Series in 1987. And, you know, we got out of school. It was amazing. And there were something between 400,000 and a million people lining the streets of the Twin Cities to greet our heroes. And I think there was maybe one arrest for a guy who ripped a license plate off a police car. And that was it. I mean, it was bliss, of course. You know, Minnesota is not accustomed to this many parades, so maybe people were just too blissed out to cause any damage.
That may have been the last one, right?
Well, 91. 91, yeah, 91 the Twins won, won again, yeah, and I think there was a parade, but it certainly was not on the level of 87.
You know, what's interesting is I'm a Philadelphia native, and so the Eagles had their Super Bowl parade. I don't remember beers being thrown or anything like that, but I do remember, you know, some neighbors were upset because there are no porta potties out there. And so, as you know, you start drinking beer, you start celebrating, you got to relieve yourself. And so maybe next time the Eagles or Sixers or whoever wins a title, they'll throw some porta potties out there too.
Yeah, I think the entire problem is that Boston just gets too many of these things. I mean, there is this kid, they call him the Sign Kid, which is a really dumb name, but okay, that he's the Sign Kid. He's been alive for 16 years. There have been 11 championship parades in his lifetime. He's been to 8 of them. And I think people are just trying to one-up themselves. I mean, personally, I am tired of riding the commuter rail with revelers who are drunk at 7:30 in the morning.
And on Halloween at that this year, right?
Right. Like, come on, Boston. This isn't your first rodeo. You should know the pitfalls of championship parading
by
now.
Act like you've been there before, right? That's what they say.
Also, what would Emily Post have to say about throwing a full beer at someone to invite him to drink it? I mean, this is not how you're supposed to do things.
Those are like deadly weapons, right? You know, you should be drinking it. Let the players do their champagne thing.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
And Kyle Draper of NBC Sports Boston. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Karen.
In the fall of 2016, Alex Blackwell suffered a concussion while playing club soccer. As she recovered, her parents noticed something they weren't expecting: changes to Alex's personality.
Very subtle changes over weeks and months that we believe began somewhere around the first of the year, about 2 to 3 months after the concussion.
That story's coming up on Only a Game from NPR.